Men, do you ever feel like you just can't get ahead? Like you're misunderstood? Like you have no one to talk to that truly hears you?
And women, are you often frustrated, hurt, and saddened in your relationships with the men in your life?
What if there were a community of like-minded men going through the same challenges that would support, hear, and understand what you're going through?
Working together in unison to create understanding, intimacy, and strong connections. That's the Way of the Illuminated Warrior.
Way of the Illuminated Warrior Talk Show is a forum of candid conversations for men and women about men. Heard every Thursday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Being a man today is not always easy. Until now.
Welcome to the Way of the Illuminated Warrior Talk Show, where we, men and women, talk about challenges that men are facing. Some call you Waska, some call you Perry. Welcome, Perry Waska.
As long as you don't call me late for dinner, it's all good.
I have started a practice of pulling a card to start off the conversation and to see where it leads us. And so this is the one that got pulled for you. And it's called What Do You Feel? And it's interesting, I've never pulled this card from this deck. So there are many opinions around you. Some are helpful, but others are distracting you from your truth. Although it can be helpful to hear the thoughts of others, when it comes down to it, you will have to come to your own decision. Do you know how unique you are, how your path is your path to be chosen, lived and created only by you? Someone else cannot become the source of your decision-making power without negative repercussions for both of you in the long run. This oracle comes to you because you have become swept up in thinking things through. You have been thinking about which way to go with a matter of importance, and you have got a bit stuck in the logic of the decision-making process. Sometimes we have to accept that any path is the path forward. And if it is not the best path, we can change our approach later on if needed. I think this is really a great place to start, particularly because you have lived this life of being behind the camera and filming television and movies and reality TV and talk shows and documentaries and Native American Music Awards and all these amazing things that you have done as an Emmy Award-winning videographer. Oh.
Stop it. Go on. No, stop it.
And you then ventured into this other world of Native American ritual and practice and shamanism and men's work and all of these things. And one of you is Perry and one of you is Waska. And they're two different lives that are now being bridged together. And I think that's probably a place a lot of people are, Waska. I know a lot of people that live one life that is more of the 3D linear world, and they live this other life that is this spiritual or unique or artistic life. And oftentimes, the crowd that's in their linear world doesn't know about this other world and vice versa. So I'd love to start right there because I think it could be a helpful conversation for people. How's that been for you?
Well, that's such a great point. Yeah. A lot of my native friends and just native culture, they say walking in two worlds. And that means like walking the good red road, which is the native or indigenous road, or walking the white road. It's two different paths. So I found myself walking two paths for a very, very long time. And most recently, when I say recently, the last X amount of years, walking more of the red road and doing my best to stay on that road more than the white road. And not that there's anything wrong with the white road. I will just say, to be a little bit more clear on it, like the white road is more about materialism. It's more about being in your head. Like you mentioned when you read the card, thinking things through. And I've been guilty of that my whole life, thinking. And it's a constant challenge for me more than feeling and getting stuck in that thinking. And you also said in the card, like any path is a good path to follow. Yes. And I think that's true if it's a path of feeling more than thinking, at least for me anyway. You know, the heart doesn't lie. You know, the head sometimes deceives us with the ego and all the thoughts that go along with it. But the heart doesn't lie. The heart doesn't follow the head. The head sometimes follows the heart and more times doesn't. So, so yeah, walking those two different paths is an interesting dichotomy. And as you said, I think a lot of people do have that challenge. So, like for yourself, for instance, you know, I knew you, the way you grew up was very different than most and all, and you have a very spiritual path. But I think through our friendship, I've also kind of dragged you back into the white world. Sorry about that.
Well, I, you know, we're both water signs. And I think the thing about being a water sign is, you know, we are here to overcome our heads. We can get trapped in that thinking mind. And we have to remember to get back into feeling. And I know that that's been a huge journey in my own life, is to drop more and more into the body, to drop more and more into the feeling way. I think you have illustrated, you know, the two paths, walking the two paths and floating between them. I have been the type that has simply let go of where I was and jumped onto a new path and dove fully into it, and then often come to the stop sign and jumped onto another path, and then continued it for as long as it needed to go. I've watched you, though, kind of leave your video world and move more into a place of rest and maybe recalibration. You've moved places, which is a huge thing, and I think a lot of people right now with the pandemic, they're rethinking where they live and they're moving to new places or getting out of relationships or thinking about whether or not their job is where they want to be. And it is a time where people will be in a lot of transition. And so as someone who has gone through the experience of literally picking up, and you can share, you know, however long you lived where you lived and picking up and moving, you know, what's that kind of experience like? Because it really is kind of like having a brand new reincarnation. It's basically starting over.
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. It is a kind of recalibration, as you said, in all your other shows, you were referring to the wormhole. It's kind of like a wormhole, you know, one area, one place, one space, one mindset, and just boom, all of a sudden being in a completely different place and recalibrating that mindset and that way of being. So yeah, I grew up, I was born in Brooklyn, nice Jewish boy from Brooklyn, and lived there for years and lived in Queens, New York, and spent most of my life on Long Island. And approximately a year and a half ago, I sold my house. I was pretty much free in any and every way, really. My boys were pretty much close to being done, my youngest out of college. And, you know, I was just being in an autonomous way. So I decided to just spread my wings and move down south to South Carolina. Cannot and probably will not ever be able to pull off y'all. Yeah, doesn't work for me. Love the friendliness and the openness and the slower pace of the South. So I lived in Greenville, South Carolina for a year and moved to Asheville, North Carolina in November, which I love because I love the outdoors. I love being in nature. And Asheville is very close to the mountains. It's actually in the mountains part of it. And there's flowing water and there's fresh air and there's groovy people and there's, you know, they call it Beer City. Not that I'm a huge beer fanatic, but it's kind of cool checking out different breweries with all the live music. So my recalibration has led me to actually imbibe in more of the things that I love, which is being outdoors, being in nature, being around, you know, people who are less stressed and more friendly. And, you know, and I still have the opportunity, even with this, you know, restrictive pandemic, I'm in New York right now. You know, I can still travel. And so I kind of feel like I have the best of both worlds. And so just to kind of tie it together, like you, when you were speaking yesterday to your guest, Bridget, talking about, like, you know, purpose and doing and being, being rather than doing, doing rather than being, you know, my feeling is, you know, I could be and do and have anywhere in the world, you know, because it really is mindset. My mindset is, you know, I'm happy, healthy, whole and healed, and I'm connected to the people that love me and that I love, and I could do that from anywhere. And, you know, money, abundance, that's never been an issue for me. I attract it to me because of my mindset and my, you know, and my philosophies. It's always, you know, I've always been abundant, whether I've had like money, materialism, or any of that, but I have health. I have people who love me, and it's so it all works. It's all been working. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I think that that's probably one of the fears that people have is, you know, if they move somewhere and start over, will they slip into their regular patterns, or can they actually start over and have a brand new life? And going back to one thing you said, that's quite the hybrid, a Jewish boy from New York and Native American teacher and men's work. Like, talk about that. That's a little bit of a talk about melting pot.
Sure, sure. Well, on one hand, yes, I'm saying oy vey, you know, the Yiddish coming out in me. And on the other hand, saying oh, which is a indigenous Native American affirmation, like hallelujah, right on, that kind of thing. Yeah, I've been very, very blessed since the year 2000. Had a really spiritual awakening, being invited into the inner sanctum of Native American spirituality and sitting with a lot of beautiful wisdom keepers and elders and sharing their stories, documenting them on video, and also having them trust me enough to A, do that, and B, to say, okay, turn off the camera. Now I'm going to tell you something that really very few non-Native people know, you know, because we know we could trust you with this, say, sacred information. And to me, I feel so blessed to have been and still in that circle. And I say have been because a lot of these beautiful, beautiful elders have passed already. And I kind of feel it's part of my promise to them and mission to keep those wisdom ways and that culture alive through however I can, through the documentary stuff that I've done with them, and just in living it, you know, and being it. Like, one of the things I love about Native American culture is ensuring the next seven generations. That's one of their philosophies. Okay, so if you think about that, ensuring the next seven generations, what does that mean? Well, if you're going to do everything in your power to make sure that in seven generations from now, not one generation, not your grandkids or the great grandkids, but seven generations, how would you live your life? What would you do to maintain a healthy way of being, healthy mindset? The environment, the air, the water, relationships, all of that. How does that play into your life, maintaining a seventh generation? So things like that really resonate with me. And I think and feel that if we all really move more towards that way of being, the world would be a friendlier, happier, less stressful, cleaner, healthier place to live. And that's just one of their philosophies that I love. So, you know, this Jewish boy lives the Native way in a Jewish Native, you know, eclectic way, you know.
You know, it makes me wonder, Waska, if people realize the impact of their words and thoughts and actions, and how it really isn't just about how we're impacting the people around us right now, but it really does trickle into that seven generations forward. And the world that we have today is created by the seven generations behind us. And all of that indigenous wisdom is slowly trickling away and disappearing. What do you think needs to happen now in this world for the younger generations to embrace some of that old wisdom? Or do you think that it's time for new wisdom? Do you think it's time for the young people to create a new world and that they'll discover this on their own?
That's a great question. A saying that I love is change is inevitable while growth is optional. And I remember years ago when I was very close doing work and being in relationship with a number of Lakota people. Those are the Plains folks out in the Four Corners area of the United States, what they call Turtle Island. There was a lot of, I don't know what dissension is the right word, but apprehension and resistance by the youth to really keep the language or even learn the native languages, keeping it alive, because they were seeing commercials, you know, Michael Jordan's like pumping up the Nike sneakers and, you know, all the materialistic things that were happening on the white road. And again, I'm not judging any of these things, but you know, it looked attractive, you know, and a lot of the youth were going after that kind of stuff. And it was, you know, it wasn't fun or popular to be learning the traditional ways of the native people. And so a lot of it has gone by the wayside, or, you know, they don't find it as attractive. So I think all spirituality to a degree needs to keep evolving with the times and with the mindset. With the caveat that the basis of being a human being is to do no harm. I mean, all the great masters, Jesus, Buddha, Allah, they've all said that, you know, to do no harm, you know, to maintain that is maybe one of the main tenets. Take care of each other, take care of the earth, and, you know, just be nice, you know? I mean, so,
you know, yeah, can we just be nice humans, right? I mean, like, that's the core of it. It's the foundation of it. Can we just be nice to each other, you know, and realize that we are a human family? We're brothers and sisters from many mothers, but ultimately from one mother, the great mother. And it's up to us to create that.
Can I share something that, you know, that you and I have spoke about that we joke about, but probably, you know, it's a little personal, not too personal, but yeah, you say yes, right? Okay. I saw your mouth move a little. we both joked about, like, we really don't like people, you know, and we laugh about that, you know, but it's not true. We do like people, but I think I could speak for both of us when I say we say we don't like people because we're both very, very, very highly sentient and, you know, we feel things deeply and we care. We care about people. We care about, you know, the well-being of really everyone, you know, and it's hard to see when people are just being, I want to use that word, but I want to keep it clean. But anyway,
it's the behavior. It's not that we don't like people. We don't like the behaviors of people. It's like, what are you doing? Why do you act like this? You know, or why are you saying these things? And it's like, gosh, are they not conscious? Are they not thinking? Are they so wounded inside and hurt that they lash out in these ways or they speak those words? Or, you know, is it just that that's what they grew up with to where they think that's the norm and that's okay? You know, we don't really know. And it's never about us anyway. That's the thing, right? I mean, we take it on. We want to judge it. We want to look at it. We want to fix it. But it's not really about us. It's about them.
It is. I believe that's true. You know, being a mirror. And I also believe it is a little bit about us also. You know, I do believe that because I've looked deeply into that. I think we're a lot more similar than we are different. You know, and I think that's especially in this age of, you know, Instagram, like influencers and all that kind of stuff. Everybody wants to be unique and beautiful and wonderful and liked and shared and viral and all that crap. Not that I'm judging it. Yes, I am. But, you know, we're a lot more similar, really. And getting back to like different cultures and ways that are dwindling a little bit that I find to be like have been so helpful for me. Something like they used to call it a sweat lodge. Native people do not like it called a sweat lodge anymore. It's not really apropos. It's either an Nipi ceremony or a reclamation ceremony, a purification ceremony. And when it's done correctly by a native person or even a non-native person who's been trained and facilitated to do it correctly, it's so valuable. It's so beautiful. It's so spiritual. It's so grounding. It is an amazing opportunity to connect with Mother Earth, to connect with yourself, connect with the heart of everybody in that womb, in that lodge. And you're naked in there. You crawl in like a baby. You kiss the ground and you say Matakuyasin, which means all my relations, and you bear it all. And, you know, I don't think we do that enough. I don't think we bear it all. I think we're always, you know, and I don't want to say we, I'll say I, but I am speaking for, you know, what I see going on when we're talking about like the behaviors of people that we don't like, be real, be truthful. You know, we hear that word authentic all the time. Like, you know, let's just cut the crap and get down to it, you know, speak your truth and, you know, be responsible for the results of that. And if it's not working, then go into something like a purification ceremony and sweat it out, pray it out, you know, cry it out, do what you got to do. And instead of holding grudges and, you know, and being a dick. Yeah, I said it. That's right. I said it, you know, come on. I work with a lot of guys. You know, it's like, come on, man, don't be that way. You know, we can move past this and evolve, you know, the materialistic, you know, bullshit stuff. All right, I'm getting a little crazy here. No, with my language, I know. But
Well, but that's the thing you do. You work with men, you help them look at what they're going to say. And let's see what's going to come out of one of these people.
Waska, man, good words. Yeah, I want to touch on the subject that you were just speaking on of know, I think we're a lot more similar than we are different. I've always found in my spiritual journey that the people that I ran into in my life, you know, there was always something about them that was similar. Like, we walked the same life in some way, shape, or form. Like, we either went through this, or we went through that, or we learned this, or we learned that. So, and it's always led me to believe that either I was meant to meet them, or they was meant to meet me, and that, you know, a lot of this stuff just doesn't happen chance. It's more so, you know, the art of the sculptor. You know, it's the nose, it's the legs, it's the details. So, you know, I just wanted to speak on that. Definitely good words.
Wow, he calls himself the villain. I think he needs to call himself the wise one. Yes, I thought that was right? Great. What a great share. Thank you. Thank you for that.
The heart, man. That was great. Yes, thank you for sharing that. Yeah, we're all connected, man. Thanks, villain. Yeah, beautiful.
All right, we got one more. Let's see what this one's got to say.
If you guys have taken any drugs, share your craziest drug story you've ever had.
And then we have that. So go ahead, Oscar.
There's always positivity in what might be perceived as other. Okay, so greatest drug story. I'm gonna call it a drug, but it's really not. I'll call it ayahuasca, and I'm gonna say it's a drug because I've met people who have taken it as a drug. So I will speak to that. I've done. We don't have enough time to talk about how many drugs that I've done in my previous life when I was young and kind of like unaware, unawake, you know. So I've tried, I've experimented and been in ceremony, ayahuasca ceremony, a few times, and that was after going through an Anipi, a cleansing purification ceremony, and it was beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful. I feel like I connected with Creator one time and had some really profound thoughts and insights come in. And to speak to your point there, bro, who just chimed in, I've also not firsthand, but have experienced other people's stories firsthand that have taken ayahuasca or been in ceremonies or been with facilitators who are using it to make money because they told me what they paid for it. And it's ridiculous because ceremony is never a charge for it. Yes, there is a donation and there's a circle of give and receive that's completed. But to use it as a drug, that or any drugs for ill-conceived purposes or just to get high, again, not judging it because I did that plenty. To me, it's a waste. And it's easy for me to say that now because I did waste a lot of my brain cells learning that. So I just will say that there's great value in expanding your mind. And if I could just add one other thing to that, Simi, a mind drug that is chemical in the internal way is Vipassana meditation. So is profound experiences I've had with ayahuasca and other hallucinogenics through the course of time, doing a 10-day Vipassana retreat. This is Vipassana is what the Buddha came to under the Bodhi tree to become enlightened. Okay, so there's no actual physical chemicals other than what's, you know, being alchemized through your body. Sit in sacred, quiet, silent space for a minimum of 10 days. And the first time I did that, it was I don't want to compare it, but as far as the experience of being feeling like I've communed with my creator and being insightful and having enlightened moments and all, it was just as powerful, if not more powerful, because I didn't have to take any kind of external drug or substance or anything. So long story short, the opportunity is there within our own minds, within our own bodies, within our own chemistry, that to alchemize wherever you want to go within yourself. So put that in your pipe and smoke it, brothers and sisters.
You are a funny really man. You are. You are funny. I agree with you. Vipassana is a very powerful way to have that same kind of high. And I think it's more of utilizing yourself and going inside and taking the time to breathe through and be with yourself, which people don't realize that's a big deal to go forth and do that and figure out who you are in that way. And then a lot of people use psychedelics now for spiritual evolution and different practices and methods. So I don't know that there's a right or wrong, but I think it's about, are we doing it to escape or are we doing it truly to expand ourselves? We've got a couple of messages here. Let's see what they've got to say. Cotton 360.
What is ayahuasca like? Like, what's the feeling? Do you see things? I'm kind of interested in the topic.
All right, Waska.
Yeah, good question. And it's interesting because a lot of people, as soon as they hear my name, Waska is my spiritual name. My birth name is Perry. Waska was given to me, long story short, in the Shishindi tradition, the Shishindi, the people known as Apache. And that name was dreamt for me by the vision keeper of our community. So a lot of people say, hey, was it ayahuasca? I'm not going to go into that. I'll answer your question first. Everybody's experience is different. So, yes, it is a hallucinogenic. You may see things. You may not see things. You know, to me, whether it's ayahuasca or anything else, vipassana or any other substances, to set your intention of what you want to experience is really more key than anything else. Because if your head's in a bad space, whatever substance you're doing, my belief and my experience is that you're going to see some negative stuff come into your head, you know, as opposed to, hey, you know, I'm going to set my intention. I want to have some, whatever, physical healing, mental healing, some insights, some, you know, creative thoughts come in, then that's what's going to happen. At least that's been my experience. So I can't really say what would happen for you if you did it. But I would add that advice to go in with a clean and clear, positive mental attitude. And that's why, again, in the indigenous way, we do a purification ceremony first. We do an inipi first and go in and sweat it out and pray and get totally grounded and get totally vulnerable. And then we would do the ayahuasca ceremony. So I found that to be you know, pretty incredible experience. So hopefully that's helpful.
Yeah. And I've been around a lot of Peruvian shamans, and they do a lot of the plant medicines and things like that. And from my own research and radio interviews that I've done, what I have learned is it is the subconscious. It is the shadow. It is the deepest, most inner self that is coming to life when you utilize these types of plant medicines. And that is what is coming up. And I think the more we control or hold down or suppress ourselves, the more likely there is to be the extreme experience. Whereas when we're open and we're allowing and we do the self-reflective work, it's a lot easier to have a gentler experience. But either way, you know, we get the healing that we are supposed to get. You know, and the thing is, you work with men, Waska, on a regular basis. So you're encountering a lot of their wounds, their issues, you know, where they need to have their breakthroughs, all kinds of things that happen.
I started in 2011 through a channeled message. I started the Way of the Illuminated Warrior. It's illuminatedwarrior.com. So I work with a lot of bros, young guys as young as like 15 years old to, you know, men in their 70s. Hey, listen, you know, I went through it all. You know, I was bullied when I was a kid. You know, I have a fro. I was abused for that. You know, hey, why come your hair's not straight? How come your nose is that? Yeah, I mean, I've heard it all, you know. So I went through a lot of pain and anguish being young. And you know, when I finally got to the space where I really didn't care what other people thought about me. And I've had a bunch of different experiences that led me down the path to be facilitating and doing what I'm doing, a lot of different initiations and trials and tribulations and all that kind of stuff. So I've heard a lot of the stories from the guys. I've experienced with them. I've had them literally threaten my life because I'm pushing their buttons. And I don't care, because that's what I do. That's as somebody, I don't even want to say as a mentor or facilitator, but when I'm sitting in sacred space or even online with somebody, which I don't like as much, but when we're in that space and I sense that, you know, there's hurt there, or there's fear, or there's trauma, you know, I call bullshit on guys, because that's honestly the stuff we're hearing is bullshit. These guys are they're experiencing something that needs to come out, that needs to be acknowledged, that needs to be held and hugged and cried over, or said F you, or whatever it is, you know. But to not, and you've taught me this through you know, our time together, Simi, and things that we've shared, is like, you got to feel it. You got to feel it fully. You got to put it out there, and you got to stand with it and be responsible for those feelings. And, you know, that's how you get through it. So what I would tell the guys is, you know, find find a sacred space, find a men's circle, find something that works for you, that you could sit and you could be heard and not judged and express yourself however you want to. Because I will put this out there now. If any of these guys listening, okay, how many of you have got friends, lifelong friends, and I've got them, okay, that are not interested in hearing what you really feel, okay, but they'd rather talk about whether it's football or banging chicks or smoking weed or whatever it is. Again, not judging that stuff, but what I am saying is, how many friends do you really have that'll sit there with you as a brother and hear your hurt, hear your pain, hear what's really going on for you, and be there for you? You know, I've got closest friends. I love them, man. I mean, some of them I invited to be on today. They're working, whatever. That's cool. But have not come to a circle in all the years I'm doing it because they're in fear. You know, they're in fear for being exposed, for being a vulnerable male.
Could you please speak and expand a little bit on your current field of work? Is there some common themes, things and themes that are changing with the world as it's changing so quickly? I'm curious about themes. I really think that, you know, with pandemics and all the other things that have gone on in the world, that there might be some common themes you're experiencing in your work as you help others. Thanks.
What are some of the common themes in regard to men, particularly right now in the world with the pandemic and a lot of the shifts that are happening and a lot of the issues that are coming up, social issues? What are your thoughts on that, Waska?
In my experience, because when I was back on Long Island before the whole pandemic, we would do our Way of the Illuminated Warrior, I call them rounds, we would get together. We would spend a whole day together once a month, and we would have time in between, telecircles, and, you know, we were tight. We were working it. We were hollering it. We were yelling. We were screaming. We were crying. We were working it all out and getting it all out there. Now, it's we're doing telecircles, and it's working, and I'm still hearing some of the same issues, and what's coming up for a lot of the guys is connection more than anything else. Family guys or guys who are living in close relationships now are actually feeling things they never felt before come up, which I don't think is just guys. I think it's everybody, you know, living with your kids or your wife or your girlfriend or your boyfriend, whoever it is, when you're used to doing a 9-to-5 or not being in such close proximity, opens up a lot of things. And I think it's a great opportunity for people to really take a look at themselves. I think that's when the mirror really comes out. So that's one thing I'm hearing with guys. They're getting stir crazy and don't necessarily, I'll just say they want more space, which is not a negative thing in any way. I think that's very important for everybody. Also, the financial issue has come up and has come up even post and pre-pandemic, I'll say, with guys. We're raised to, like, get out there and make money so we could buy things and woo women and all that kind of stuff. And that's always been an issue. And, you know, I speak on abundance, and it's very easy for me to say because I really have always been abundant. But and not because I was born into money. I certainly was not. Lived in a middle-class family growing up. And, you know, there were hard times. So a lot of this comes with mindset. Of how you live your life. Again, you were talking about that yesterday on your show. It's like, what are you doing? You know, it's not what you're doing. It's who are you being, you know? And for me, I could speak from firsthand experience. When I'm being Waska instead of Perry, and Perry's not a bad guy either, but when I'm being Waska, living that good red road and walking in a way that I care about every interaction, I'm being respectful to women, to everybody, you know, but I'm being respectful and mindful of the things that are going on in the world, not saying, that's, you know, BS, that's them, that there is no us in them. It's us. We're all us.
Yeah, I think that's a great response, Waska, and it gives us some insight into the psychology of what men are going through. And I think that generally in the world, like, I generally feel an undercurrent of frustration, agitation. Fear has always been the issue that is around, and it's time for us to really look at, you know, who we are. And one thing I like about the fact that you just designated Waska versus Perry, that's something that I do as well. You know, Simran is my higher self. It's when I know I can speak from truth, and I calling myself that, it raises me up to my highest state of being. And when people call me Simi, which was my childhood name, my shadow is likely to come out because that is the insecure one. That is the one that was wounded. That is the one that at times doesn't feel good enough or feels like she has to work really, really hard to get people's love or to get to be liked or anything like that. And then there's the middle one, which is Sim. And she's the one that has humanity. She's the one that can embrace the insecure small self. She's the one that can revere the higher self. She's the one that is willing to feel everything and live this life and experience everything. And I think when we get to know ourselves on the different dimensions that we possess, then all of a sudden we can achieve a mastery over ourselves and our own life, our words, our thoughts, our actions. And we become better people because of it, because then we can kind of be our own mother and father and discipline ourselves. And I think that's where the world is at this point, with the frustration of the pandemic, with being in relationships and getting agitated and having our emotions and our fears and everything come up, our worries about finances. It's having us look at our shadows. It's having us look at what we want, what we aspire to, what's possible, which is really, really powerful. And, you know, more than anything, I think women perceive that there are a lot of wounded men out there. There's a lot of women that are looking for men that are willing to have their own balance of masculine and feminine. And I would love for you to speak to, you know, the wounded male psyche. And what do you think is the primary foundational cause of that, if it had to be kind of blanketed in a category? And before I have you speak, I'm going to go ahead and let Cotton say something again.
I had a question about working out and sweating and doing physical activity. Is that ever a part of your line of work, either of you? I really like what y'all are talking about, and I'm definitely going to be tuning in whenever y'all are live.
Thanks, Cotton. Go ahead, Waska. Talk about what you do with men during your retreats specifically, sure, or what you advise for men. I think that, you know, exercise is a great way to relieve energy and stress.
Sure, yes. That's a great question, Cotton. What I was referring to as far as an inipi ceremony where you do sweat is it's, you know, it's different than working out, just even chemically and mentally it's different. Working out, I mean, I think that's an essential part of anybody's life. Exercise, sweating, you know, sweating it out, again with a good mindset. I have a buddy, a very dear friend, you know, he's been working out forever, but he's very angry, you know, so he sweats it out, and he's you know, he shared with this man actually recently, he's working out and sweating it out because otherwise he's going to hurt somebody, you know, and that's a whole nother issue. So again, I go back to the intention, is working out, is sweating good? Yes, it's good. You know, go in there with a positive mindset of like, you know, I'm building my body, I'm building my mind, I'm building something really positive here with it. And so when you do sweat it out, it's going to be, even chemically, it's, you know, it's scientific, it's healthy for you. You know, whether it's, well, I'm not going to get into the whole chemistry thing, but yes, it's. I definitely think that's positive.
You know, Tony Robbins, who is one of the foremost leadership coaches in the world, he definitely says that when men or women exercise and work out, that is the best time to really proclaim your affirmations out loud. That movement of the body, that energy that's surging through us, that is the perfect time to reprogram the mind and start to create not just a new self, but literally you create a new world, a new vibration. You bring out a new sense of the law of attraction so that you start to pull into your life the things that you really, really want. And so I think that's a powerful practice. And I know that I've seen pictures on your website at illuminatedwarrior.com, how you take men out in the woods. And y'all do a lot of rigorous activity. And I think that does help to move some of the dense energy that is sitting in the body, because when you're doing emotional work, when you're doing spiritual work, it has to release in some way, and it can release through crying, it can release through screaming, it can release through laughter, it can release through activity. And so, you know, whichever way works for an individual is great, and oftentimes we need all of them. But I think men gravitate towards the physical activity more often, but perhaps are more unconscious as to how they can really utilize it for personal growth and spiritual evolvement.
I always say, you know, it's the challenges that give us the opportunity for growth. And it seems like whether young or old, the guys would really, I think, really gravitate mostly to, like, whether it's a survival race, a mud run, the Inipi ceremony, all the things that require physical strength and challenge. Those were the ones that they, oh, what are we doing next? You know, where you absolutely grow through that. And possibly not even realizing some of the biggest growth came through the other challenges of, like you were saying, the crying or the emotional release and all. So it all goes hand in hand.
Excellent way of this conversation. I'm wondering if there's anything we can do individually, Waska, to help with some of the underlying anger issues of men in the United States. And I don't want to just say the United States, but through, you know, with the insurrection and some of the political stuff that's been going on, there seems to be some underlying anger. And I guess that's the best word to put it. Can you expand on that or shed some light on that for me, please? What I can do myself to help.
Great, great question. Thank you for asking that. And that kind of speaks to what I've really experienced a lot. Yes, anger is probably the number one emotion that guys really stuff down, as well as let it fly. And I think that's because if I had to use one word between the feminine masculine connection or disconnection, is misunderstanding, miscommunication. We're not really taught as we grow up how to really communicate. And that book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, it really is apropos, because we speak two different languages. The anger comes from frustration, from being misunderstood, and believe it or not being heard or understood. You know, you always hear the cliche, women, you know, the man, you know, they don't stop talking. You would be blown away in some of these circles. Guys, when they are open to speaking, it's like, you can't shut them up, which is so beautiful, you know, to bear their heart, really, because they're speaking from the heart, and they haven't done that maybe ever. And now they have brothers that are sitting there listening to them and supporting. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. So what can you do, Beth, is what you're asking. What really I would recommend to any women to do, it's a slow burn. It's a slow process, because men have to be given the opportunity to, I don't even want to say relearn, to learn. Just like, you know, same thing with women. We need to communicate better with each other and learn how that is. So many times there's miscommunications because of things being taken personally, things being assumed, and just not really understanding. And then, you know, one person goes one direction, the other person goes the other direction, never gets resolved, and it builds upon. That's where the frustration and the anger comes. So it's, you know, God gave us two ears and one mouth, and it goes from men listening to women and women listening to men. Just the way I always tell guys, women don't want us to fix anything. This is like the biggest thing. Guys are fixers, builders, hunters, gatherers. Women could bear children, for God's sake. Okay, men. If a man had to push a baby out, we would all be dead. There wouldn't be any men. So, you know, we need to respect and honor the life givers of this world as what they are, which is sacred, you know, feminine beings who have, you know, given birth and perpetuated life. And yes, it's a co-creation. But women are a lot stronger than I think men give credit for. And, you know, so for women to sit and listen to what the men have to say, and for men to sit and listen to what the women have to say. And when you don't understand, say, hey, you know, no anger, no judgment, no, you know, explain it. I don't get it. I don't understand it. And that goes both ways. To have a clear and special and sacred communication is a great place to start.
Great response. Let's see what Cotton has to add about that.
Yeah, I understand the anger point. I was always the little kid, and I got bullied, and I started fighting. And then when I got older, I got into boxing. And boxing really helped me not be that angry anymore. And I see there's a misconception around boxers, like, oh, you box, you must be angry all the time. Like, but it's really not like that. And if you meet me in real life, I'm the nicest guy, like, I don't have a problem with anyone, like, I really don't, but boxing really helps me get out the anger that I do hold within myself.
Awesome.
Cotton, you come across as a nice guy, so thank you for your comments.
Come into the circle, bro. Let's heal, man. Let's heal together. Let's sweat it out. Let's talk it out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, I think that that's the one thing that men and women really do have in common is we all want to be seen, heard, and acknowledged. And there is a language barrier. There is this inability to comprehend what where the other is. And do you think it's that men come more from the intellect and the mind, and that women kind of are in the emotion, and both sides of that are in the wounded or shadow space, and that they need to kind of, maybe the women need to come in more into the mind and the men need to come more. I don't know. What do you think, Waska? Where, what is the meeting ground? What's the red road between men and women?
Yeah, well, I'll speak for myself and a lot of the guys that I've worked with. I definitely believe that it's the mind, the thinking that guys go to first. Like how you know, it goes back to, you know, caveman time, even like how can I fix this? So it goes more into the thinking rather than the feeling. So that's a huge you know, catalyst for really opening up is feeling. You know, how do you feel? How do you feel more than what's going on in your head? And yeah, I think that's a big part of it.
I feel for men because I have seen how men have always had to be the providers and the ones that have taken care of. And I think about the men that have been, you know, sent off to war and what they've had to see, or how that has passed down generationally through the bloodlines, and why there are so many men that are shut down or not able to speak about their emotions, or have not been taught to speak freely enough about what they're feeling. I think that from the woman's perspective, we are required to have more compassion. We have to have a level of understanding of what generationally they carry and how they were reared, and that whole concept of you got to be tough. You know, men don't cry, big boys don't cry, you know, all these things. I've seen that. I've seen that language. I've seen how that impacts. What do you think needs to change in regard to the rearing of our boys,
sure.
of our children, of our young males that needs to change both by women? And then what needs to change by men? Because obviously what we've been doing is not working.
Marianne Williamson said, a woman's greatest psychic need is to feel cherished. And a man's greatest psychic need is to be acknowledged, is to feel acknowledged. And I think that's really true, and kind of goes back to the origins of how we're reared. You know, the cherishing is more of a feeling, emotion. You know, the acknowledgement is, you know, guys want to say, hey, yes, you did a good job. You fixed this. You did, you know. So anyway, if that's helpful, I always love that. That expression that you put out there. So anyway, to answer your question, what needs to be changed in rearing? Talking before about my previous ways in life and all, I was a little wild as a kid. I was introverted, but then I busted out, and then I really, you know, went in a different direction, trying to find myself. Once I became a father, it was a huge, profound shift for me because I grew up in an alcoholic family. You know, my dad drank every day. So, and that's a whole conversation for another time. But I did not want to raise my boys. I've raised three boys, two from a previous marriage and one from a long-term relationship. I've raised three young, fine men. And I changed my mindset. I changed my ways of being. I stopped being party Perry. And before I was even initiated into being like on the red road of being Waska, I changed. I cleaned my act up. And I started living what I wanted out of my dad that I never got. And I had those little realizations that maybe I didn't have at the time as profoundly as I have now. But the things that I wanted to hear my father say, I love you. I wanted him to come to my ball games. I wanted him to be there for me. And yeah, he couldn't because that wasn't his life and the way he was brought up. So I live my life the way I wanted my boys to be. And it shows today. They're all three of them are very autonomous and respectful of all genders, all races, all peoples. And they could make their way through the world and, you know, they could sit in a room and have a conversation with you and be like, hey, this is, you know, nice young man, you know? So I think, raising our kids from the heart, being real and talking about the things that need to be talked about and sharing, what we know to be, you know, again, the ultimate truths, you know, do unto others, you know, how do you want your son to treat your daughter, you know, somebody else's daughter. If you have daughters, how do you want somebody else's son to treat you? You know, that those kind of things. They need to be, those conversations need to be had, and we need to be held accountable. You know, the kid, the kids as well as the parents. So, you know, that's just a little something that I found to be very helpful rearing my boys.
Yeah, I think it goes back to that point that we have to first learn how to parent ourselves. And
I'd like you to speak a little bit about vulnerability, Waska. Do you purposely show a vulnerable side of yourself when you're mentoring young men? I find that to be a very powerful tool, but not too many people are able or up to the challenge.
Yeah, great question, Beth. Thanks. Absolutely. I mean, the process, the Illuminated Warrior work would not work if I wasn't vulnerable, if I wasn't real, if I wasn't cry or, you know, curse or do whatever is real and emotional and be and put myself out there, you know, for the young and the old guys. And what's been so profound for me to kind of even tie this together is I've had, two of my three sons go through the Illuminated Warrior work, as well as a number of other, like, you know, as young as 15, 16, 17, 18 year olds. And, you know, the old warriors, you know, we think we know everything. Personally, I will say I got so much out of hearing the younger guys, and, you know, the other old bulls also will agree to this. You know, it's been such a blessing to have guys of all ages, you know, younger guys to the older warriors again, benefiting, because it's very different. The challenges and the things that go through young guys' minds is very different, not completely, but very different ways than it was when I was their age, you know. So vulnerability is absolutely key, because if not, you know, excuse my expression, you're being full of shit. You have to be vulnerable. You have to speak your truth. You have to let it all out there, because otherwise, what are you mirroring? What are you asking them to do if you're not doing it yourself? And there's a lot of really good coaches and men circles out there that I've checked out also that I think are really, really changing the face of masculinity and respecting the divine masculine and the sacred feminine and having that conversation and getting, you know, the two the two genders within ourselves and literally and figuratively to communicate better and be more open. So it's it's happening. It is happening. Yeah. That's great. Yeah.
I do think we are changing and growing. We have another listener, Kinshindo, wants to say something.
So you're saying that having a family enabled you to take a more spiritual path?
Yeah, Kinshindo. I would say it just woke me up. It was a wake-up call for me to look at my life. I was drinking and partying a lot at the time. And I looked at my life. I'm like, okay, you don't want to be raising your kids in that way. Cause I was raised by an alcoholic dad and I didn't get what I wanted. And I could have very easily went down that path, but wherever it was within me woke me up and said, hey, wake up, you know, and I did it differently. So that was the catalyst for me, was having my first son. Yes.
I think we all get that at some point, that spiritual 2x4, whether it is, you know, starting a family or losing a relationship or losing a job or having a drug problem and like crashing, like we all hit something that finally is the time that says, okay, I got to wake up. I got to do life differently. Mm-hmm. And then we make those changes. Cotton, what do you think?
Yeah. As a man born in Louisiana, definitely raised country. My dad was always the provider. He was out on the oil rigs working months at a time. I was, even for my older sister, I'm the provider now as an 18-year-old man, just in the world providing for my family and all. And I definitely try not to cry, just so I'm the rock for everyone else in my family. You know, they can come to me for their problems. And I like having them come to me because I can understand their pain. And, like, even when my grandma passed, I was there for my sister. I did cry, like, to my brothers that I feel super close with. So, like, as long as I have those people, I'm all right being the rock.
Cotton, you're such an amazing guy. Gosh, 18, that is so young. And I want you to speak to him about the emotion, Waska, because it is so important to feel. We can't bottle it up. We can't suppress it. It'll come back and kick us in the ass if we do. It'll tear us down inside. Emotion is such a healthy thing, and we have to let ourselves express. And that goes back to that vulnerable question that Beth even talked about. Speak to that, Waska. Tell Tell Cotton what you would say to a client that you're coaching.
Yeah, well, Cotton, kudos, man, especially at 18. The follow-up of what you're doing now is going to be beautiful. You're already setting a legacy, which is beautiful. And what I will say, you know, he's asking me to comment on is very important. Emotions buried alive never die. So if you're keeping it in, if you want to cry, if you're feeling you need to cry, I believe that that will be so much more beneficial for not just the men, but also the women that are in your family and all. And it's a sign of strength. When you were saying that, Cotton, the first thing that came to mind is like the rock. Well, if you think about rocks, okay, or in the Native American way, they call them the grandfathers because they contain wisdom, okay? They've been around for God knows how long, right? Okay, they could go through intense heat, intense cold, and they maintain that wisdom. But you think about rocks that have been weathered by storms, by rain, by snow, by sleet, okay? And they change very, very slowly, but they do evolve, and they do withstand the test of time, and they do maintain that wisdom, and they do cry. Rocks cry, okay? You heard it here first. Rocks cry. So seriously, though, it's letting those emotions out is a gift. It will be a gift for the people around you. They will not judge you. They will love you that much more for being vulnerable. So yes, it's important.
Waska, repeat that statement that you said at the beginning. Emotions
buried alive never die.
Emotions buried alive never die. You got to hear that again. Emotions buried alive never die. That is probably the most profound thing you'll hear this entire hour. Go ahead, Waska.
Well, you think about it. If you suppressed, let's say, your anger, okay, do you think it's not going to come back up at some point in time? Okay, it's not. You're not going to get triggered and do something to express that anger, and maybe not even know why you're angry at that point in time. You know, there's engrams and things that trigger us that we can't even fathom. Like that could have happened, like when we in our early childhood time. So that's why it's so important to emote and feel and express ourselves. And guys are not really bred or trained to do that. And that's why it's so important. That's why a lot of the work that I do with the guys, it's really, that's what it's about, feeling, you know, it's about expressing, it's about emoting, it's about letting out what needs to come out and being supported by other brothers. I mean, I don't know how many guys have that with friends, unless they're involved in some kind of men's circle or spiritual or church group or something. Most guys don't have that unless they seek out a group to do that with. And that's why I think the men's work is so vital more than ever, just for autonomy, for authenticity, for health, for balance, for relationships, for it's so many reasons, you know, for joy. You know, I mean, the guys that I work with, I mean, we're literally brothers from other mothers, man. I mean, we're connected for life. And even I've had a couple guys, because I call guys on their bullshit, man. That's the work that I'm supposed to do. I don't let them just slide. I've had guys who literally a mafioso dude who threatened my life once. And, you know, I was there for that brother, man. And he, you know, he left before he killed me. And it took him a while. He came back, man. Like, man, I'm so sorry, man. You know, you helped me so much, and I want to be in the inner circle again, man. I need it, you know. But you know, when I don't want to say when the teacher is ready, that you know, the student ready, the teacher will appear. When the little boy is ready. Well, no. How about this? When the man is ready, the boy will disappear. How about that?
There you go. That's your new line. That's your new line. Thank you for such an amazing conversation. I think this was profound, and it was a necessary conversation. And I think men need to get together and have more and more of these conversations. So I'd love for you to share, you know, how people can get in touch with you if they're looking for a men's community, if they're looking for a sharing circle, or if they're looking in the future to do some coaching or do some retreats or some active work with you, Waska. Would you share how they can find you and where they can find you?
Well, thank you. Thank you, Simran. I first want to acknowledge all the great work that you do, and thank you for having me on today and giving me this opportunity to, you know, to speak to some of these things and to share with the guys. So illuminatedwarrior.com, that's the website that guys could go on and see some of the you know, some of the work that we've done and connect, whether it's the monthly telecircle, which is great, that's what we're doing now for all the guys, or one-on-one coaching or mentoring. I do really very much look forward to getting the retreats going again, which you guys have been asking me about. But with COVID, we're just going to wait on that a little bit more. Again, thanks for the guys, Cotton and the other guys who have listened in and contributed. And again, Beth and for you, Simran, it's a blessing. Thank you very much.
Visit IlluminatedWarrior.com if you'd like to go deeper and find out more about what's available within the Illuminated Warrior Men's Transformational Community. Tune in next time for more candid conversations for men and women about men on the way of the Illuminated Warrior Talk Show every Thursday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network with hosts Simran and Waska. Until next time, illuminate your path with loving kindness.